Welcome to the Purposefully Human Radio Hour. My name is Neil Woodson, and I'm here with my co-host, Jerry Seifert, sometimes known as Coach Jerry. Jerry, I know you're out on the West Coast and been out there for a while. You got any news to report to us today? Anything happening in your world?
Oh, well, I can say we're enjoying a lovely summer here in Seattle. I had no idea how beautiful summer it was up here in the Pacific Northwest, and I'm unfortunately counting down the number of pretty days left before we get into the rainy season, but I'm definitely going to enjoy every single one of them because they're just like one sunny day after another. And I did also want to, on behalf of Purposefully Human, share a couple of things. One, for those of you that might just be finding us, we are a international grassroots organization focused on bringing humans and organizations into their fullness as authentic humans. We invite you to join us in our quest and be part of the conversation. And to that end, this is the third episode of this series, and so we're getting, Neil, quite a lot of very positive reactions to the first two. And as always, if people want to comment or make suggestions on this episode or any of the others, and I'll also point out that while you're looking them up on the website, there are links to a series of author spotlight interviews we did late in 2024, authors that wrote on human topics. So there's beginning to be quite a lot of content related to Purposefully Human that I invite people to look into.
Thanks, Jerry. I just, so everybody knows, you can find out more about Purposefully Human. Just go to purposefullyhuman.com, or you can go to LinkedIn and search for Purposefully Human and request to be a member of that group so you can get active and start being part of the conversation.
Yep.
So I don't really have any big news myself, other than, yeah, the weather is shifting, and thank God the obliterating heat has calmed down a bit here in the mid-Atlantic region, and things are looking pretty nice. We've had a week of really, really nice evenings here, so I'm very grateful for that. I want to get right to our guest. Today on our program, we have Steve Foran with us, and Steve's work centers on making people happy at work. Steve's dream is 1 billion happy people, and I initially found out about Steve kind of by accident, and I saw that dream, 1 billion happier people, and I immediately had to reach out to him. And I reached out to him on LinkedIn, and he got back to me, and we've been kind of friends ever since. We've never physically met, but we have talked many, many times. Steve's the founder of Gratitude at Work, and that's an organization on a mission to shift corporate cultures by bringing gratitude into the workplace every day. And so with that, I think we can all agree that Steve's all about bringing more humanity into our lives and our work. So I can't wait to talk to him. Steve, welcome to the Purposefully Human Radio Hour.
Hey, it's great to be here, Neil. Thanks. Thanks. And hi to you too, Jerry.
Welcome.
Steve, I know we have, we've talked a little bit and kind of prepped you a little bit for what's coming. Typically we ask some discussion questions and we get going, and then we jump right into some burning questions that you have no idea what those are.
No, I don't.
But they're kind of fun, but they'll be thought provoking. And we hope we can kind of get your brain stimulated and get people going with that. But that's near the end. Let's just dive right into some questions about, and this will involve your work and involve all of that. So the first question we typically ask people is about being purposefully human. And what does being purposefully human mean to you? And what's your definition of it? And if you could give an example of what that might look like.
Yeah, okay, thanks. You did kind of get me to think about this one. And so I given some thought to it. And I think being purposely human is, to me, it's showing up as your best self. Like, as I think about it, like showing up as your best self, meaning knowing who you are, knowing who, let's first person this, knowing who I am, knowing what my gifts are. And when I know what my gifts are, I don't brag about them, and no false humility in terms of shying away from them. You know what I mean? It's just like knowing who you are, where your giftedness is, and using your gifts in the service of humanity. And to me, this is not a destination. It is a journey of mastery, right? That's what I kind of think. And it's, to me, it's like standing in, like when we're purposefully human, when I'm purposefully human, I am standing in my greatness. You know, using my gifts, however that is. And, you know, an example of this is I believe in supporting my community. And I've been on a couple different boards and like causes that I feel deeply passionate about. And I would leave those board meetings feeling, oh my God, I feel like I'm just drained because I'm not in my talents. I'm not in my gifts. The, I'm not to say bureaucracy, but the process of running the whole boards and the operation of it, that's not where I'm gifted. I'm gifted in teaching and do, right? Help. That's where I'm going to be purposely human when you put me in a place where I can use my gifts and talents to that organization. We still support it. And I didn't just pull out all of a sudden. But I said, Ernie, you know, I believe in the work that we're doing here. I'm not in the right role doing this. We got to find someone that's going to step in behind me. So,
So wow, tons of stuff there to take away, but I love the fact that you pulled yourself out of that. That you, to me, that's the maybe the most human thing, is that you saw that this isn't, I don't belong in this role. This isn't the best use of what I can do. I can better serve this community in a different way. And that kind of consideration to me is, I mean, that's exceedingly human, exceedingly very high integrity. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, thanks. And I mean, I like people to like me. There's no question about it. I like people to like me. And I was concerned about having the conversation because I, the story I was telling myself was, I'm going to offend. I'm going, like, I just tried to be as honest as I could with folks and the chair. And to my surprise, which really shouldn't surprise me, they're 100% supportive. You know?
So they championed it.
Yeah. Like.
Yeah, I want to triple underscore what you just pointed out, because I think a lot of people, maybe they have some intuition about what their gifts are, but they're reluctant to engage. And so they either end up doing things that are not suited for their gifts, or they feel obligated to continue in that role because they think that people expect it of them. So there's an, this is fantastic because there's a, there's sort of a systematic challenge really to organizations and people being purposefully human, because there's a lot of that. Let's be honest, there's a lot of that that goes on. Even if you get someone to be fully in touch with what their gifts are, then there's a second step. You actually have to act on that, and you have to implement the alignment. You can't just know it, you have to live it. Great, great, great way to start the conversation, Steve.
Yeah, thanks. And you know, this idea of it, I kind of think of it, I think of a lot of things as journeys, not destinations, like a journey of mastery. Because as we grow in our self-awareness, we continue to grow as humans, right? And so we're continually tweaking and move, like just as I used to say to my mom, we're getting gooder and gooder at it.
Oh, I love
You
it.
know, what's funny is I, in all the teaching that I've done, one of the things that I came to a little late in that journey, but was the idea of excellence. And most people seem to think that excellence is a destination.
Yeah.
And I've always said, no, excellence isn't a destination. Excellence is a journey.
Great.
It's a journey of getting better and better and better.
Yeah.
And it's waking up every day and saying, well, what can I do just 1% better today than I did yesterday? You know? And I mean, I just love the way you couched it all in those terms, you know, that life's not, we're not there yet, you know, and you got to keep striving for it and keep pushing
Yeah.
for
Yeah.
which leads me to question number two. And question number two is, you know, we're talking about being purposefully human. We're talking about doing it with intention, you know, and you've given us a great example of that. But what's the problem? Why is this a thing? Why are we talking about it? Why are we even bringing this up? What's the problem out there? Why do we need to be talking about being purposefully human? Why is this something we're committing to? What do you see out there?
Yeah, well, we got to remember my lens. The glasses I'm going to be looking through are the glasses of gratitude and grateful leadership. Those are not the only glasses, but they really do shape how I make sense of the world. But we live in the most prosperous time in all of human history. And if you look at what the United Nations World Happiness Report is telling us, is that for the first time, well, over the last 7 years, this is the first time that happiness is on a decline in the world, and it's being led by us in the West. And if you comb through and just kind of digest the 267 or whatever page report that came out this past March, it is even going to tell what we now know is that young people today have fewer social connections than they have ever had since they've been doing this.
Now, are we talking about, just to be clear, are we talking about all social connections? Or are we talking about physical, real connections? Are we including virtual connections? What
We're
does
not
that mean?
talking about social media. We're
Okay,
talking
I just wanted
about
to make sure we're clear.
not so very, very, very good clarification. Like in terms of friendships and bonds. And here's the problem with this is that, you know, we know that as we age, we get fewer social connections for a couple of reasons. Life gets busy, people maybe things happen. You have more social connections when you're younger than as you get older. And social connections is a driver of, you know, some people think happiness is this fleeting thing. Like, I'm not talking about Pollyanna. This is, think of personal well-being and being able to thrive. So, two things. Most prosperous time in human history, happiness is going down. And for the young people, this is our next generation that's coming into the, you know, that's stepping in. It's like they're at starting line, go 400 meters behind. And this is a 400 meter race. Okay. Now you're going to start 400 meters behind when you and I started the race. I don't think that's good.
Well,
Hard to
I know
beat there.
my son is in his late 20s and he's the youngest of my two kids. And I know he, in many, many ways, has a bit of a chip on his shoulder as far as our generation. That, you know, it's kind of like you guys screwed it all up for us. And I don't disagree to a certain extent. And they have been set back. There's a wealth gap. I mean, there's a gigantic wealth gap.
Yeah, there is.
There, it's much more difficult for his generation to buy a home, to do all those, to do a lot of those things. And so a lot of the trappings of success that have been thrown up that we had, and that they have been talking, and we talked about it through their whole early life, right? They're now looking, saying, we have, but you told me success was get a job, work, go to school, get good grades, get a job, work hard, buy a house, get married, all those things. But you've made it so hard to do those things. And so I think there's a lot of anxiety out there and a lot of depression and a lot of that stuff. And I think you've hit the nail on the head in a big way, that's a huge problem. I want to get to this point of why have we become less human? How has that made us less? Is that pushing us in that direction of being less human? What do you see? What do you think?
Think part of being human means being connected to others,
Okay.
right? And so I remember listening. Maybe it was read. I read a story. No, it was a podcast I was listening to. They asked an anthropologist. They were interviewing, and they asked her, "How can you tell when you found the first markings of a civilization?" And you know what I'm thinking? Clay bowls or things like this or buildings. You know what she says? A healed femur.
That's Margaret Mead.
Okay. That's who
Wow. Oh,
it was.
interesting. That's
So
who it
I
was. Yeah. Margaret
look
Mead
like
said
a
that.
healed femur. Why is that? Well, you know the she goes on to explain, not just a couple thousand years ago. If you had a broken femur, the only way you survived is this. You are in community with others.
Somebody
And
had to
so,
tend to you.
what's that? Yeah,
Somebody had to
somebody
tend to
tend
you.
you. Someone's
Somebody,
got to
you
help
can't.
you.
And in a society where you move around all the time, which is what they were,
Yeah.
they were hunter-gatherers. They moved constantly. You had a broken leg. You were not going anywhere.
Oh, so they were carrying you.
Somebody took care of you. And
Yeah.
somebody
That's
carried you, took
interesting.
care of you, nursed you, all of that.
Food, like all this stuff. Anyhow, you know the story better than I do, Neil. It's like so this idea of connection and community to me is integral to
And so
being.
we've lost that, is what you're saying. We're
Well,
losing that, or we lost it? Okay.
we gotta be careful. Like we have so much here. I truly believe we do, and we just got to be careful. And when I say we, I mean me. Each of us has to own this for ourselves. I can't own it for you or anyone, my kids or anyone else's kids. I can only own it for me and do what I can in my sphere.
So what does it mean? What does that mean? What does it mean, Donut?
I think some of the things that we need to do, whether it's in our homes or in our workplaces, eat together more often. And
No,
look at the
I don't think
200.
that's funny at all. I think that
It's
that's, I see that. Yeah,
eat
absolutely.
together more often. And in our household, like when we get the grandkids over, it can be real the 1-year-old and 3-year-old, it's really hard for us. Navigating, trying to, okay, let's try and make this as much as one meal as possible, even though we're trying to juggle and make things happen. And we're not all sitting there at the same time. Believe me, we're not. When there's just Linda and I feeding the two kids, right? The grandkids. But we try to make it one meal. So eating together is, I think it's a really, really big thing. Encouraging people, like, as leaders in organizations, we need to be encouraging people to connect with others. Like, grab a coffee. Like, just if you want to talk about work, why don't you, if you're working on a project and the next thing or a proposal for a client, do it on a walk together. And you're going to do something else by connecting together. And interesting is that there is a tendency, a human tendency, to overestimate the negative burden or how we think it's going to make people feel, which is going to make us not want to do it. It's going to cause us to be reluctant to even suggest that. And if you're listening, is I suggest that you will naturally think, oh, you will overestimate the negative harms associated with it and underestimate the positive outcomes. And when science, when they research anything like this, studies where they encourage people to get together for a coffee or do something at Connect or to help someone or express gratitude, people consistently overestimate the negative impacts, underestimate the positive impacts. And when they do the follow-up, the people who are part of the intervention always report higher levels of positive affect and feeling better about it. So we need to, as leaders, encourage more of it and step into more of that ourselves.
Really interesting you talk about this encouragement of connectivity. I was listening to a podcast the other day with and it, the guest on the podcast was Jonathan Haidt and he was talking about who teaches at New York NYU Stern. He was talking about young people and what's happening, kind of like what you mentioned a minute ago. And he talked about some schools that are basically banning cell phones. When you come into school, they have lock boxes. You put your phone in a lock box and you get it back at the end of the day. And they said at the beginning, it was tough. No, every kid complained. Oh, I can't do this, that, and the other. But after a little bit of just a little bit of time, they actually like it. And the reason they like it is because they actually get to connect with each other and talk to each other. And they spend time with each other, and they're not distracted constantly by this little pull, that little thing. Oh, wait, oh, wait, hold on. I got to do this. I've got to do that. It's no, I can really talk to you. I've got a band of friends, and we do things together, almost like when we went to school, But they're actually gravitating towards that, and now they appreciate it. And they gladly hand over their phones. Which I thought was a really, really interesting thing that, in a way, the school is encouraging this connection by taking that distraction away. And it's doing a whole lot for the school and for the kids to do
I
it.
love it. So connection's one piece. The other thing I think we can be doing is connects back to this whole idea that I said at the beginning, knowing your gifts, is to reflect and to try and to get a clear understanding of what your own giftedness is. Because how can you put your gifts in service to the world if you don't know what they are, not really clear on them, right? So I think that is something that we can do, and to look at wherever our lot in life is, the successes, how big or no matter, and to really understand who are the people that have been a part of your success. And when we know that, that's going to help us dial up how grateful we are. And because I think gratitude is another secret ingredient to helping me, you watching, listening, to feel more connected with those around us. And I kind of call them your success team. Who's on your success team? And to know who those folks are, because I know my success is interdependent with so many people.
And that fits right in with your gratitude principle, you know.
It does. So yeah. Anyhow, what do you think all of that? How I know there's still more coming, so.
Well, I want to ask Jerry a question because Jerry, I know you have really kind of connected is probably not the right word, but I'll say it, connected to worries about AI. And how AI fits into something like this. Because in many ways, AI is, in a sense, kind of disconnecting us to a certain degree from that. You were just talking, Steve, about, reflecting and essentially connecting to your gifts or understanding your gifts. And I think AI, in some ways, is going to become for some people, will be a block to that because they're going to get lazy and say, gift schmiffs, use AI. Right. And I know, Jerry, you and I have talked a little bit about that. You got any thoughts in that arena when it comes to this?
Oh yeah, tons. Because what you're saying is exactly what's happening. As you know, almost every week there's a new study. As the researchers catch up with culture, now we have allegations that ChatGPT encourages suicidal ideation, and there was a lawsuit filed yesterday against OpenAI on that on those grounds. But there was a recent study from MIT, really one of the first that really documented what's happening to the minds of frequent AI users, ChatGPT in particular. And what you're describing, the what some call the outsourcing of the thinking process, is can be observed on MRI scans, for example, and it's making us work for the machine rather than, historically machines work for us, and causing our mental skill, our thinking skills to diminish. You can actually see on MRI your mind not engaged. And because everything good that happens in our brains comes through engagement and experience, not only, because one of the things they found, for example, is that people that use ChatGPT don't remember what it developed. So they ask it a question, it develops a page of text, they publish that page of text, and then somebody says, well, could you elucidate on the second point? Well, I need to see what I wrote, as opposed to actually having created that artifact. So yeah, there are profound effects, and unfortunately, there's always a delay, right, between when the research community catches up with popular developments. But all, every week there's something coming out now, and the red lights are flashing, to be honest. And I'm not, there's this tendency now to talk about AI doves and AI hawks and things like that. And no, that's not what it's all about. It's all about, what's serving humanity. Because if we deprive ourselves, Steve's talking about how connection and community is essential. Well, being the thinking animal is essential to our humanity too. So yeah, there's a lot of these things that are entwined.
Steve, I'm going to have to throw out the gratitude thing here because I'm grateful to you because you jumped right into what we can practically do to fix things. And I don't even have to ask that question. So, but I love the idea of eating together because it's very primal. That's I think we've throughout history, humans have found eating together, sitting together and breaking bread as something that every single culture does that. And that's a way we can gather together and share. It's a place where we share, we serve each other, we do things that are just fundamentally human. And I don't know if, and I'm sure somebody out there is a biologist or some sort of scientist who could tell me that no, there are other creatures that do that, but I can't think of any that sit down, that make a meal for another being and sit down with a group and share that over a period of time where we're not building anything, we're not making money, we're not doing anything other than just sharing stuff and connecting.
It's if and if you're not in the habit of doing that, or if you have a really hectic, busy schedule that I don't understand because I don't have kids around the house all the time, I just encourage you, try one a week. Like this isn't about going to three meals a day. Like wherever you are today is just, I think, let's just step it up with what is that next place? Because this is a journey, like everything. So.
I know when I was a kid, the rule in the house was when the light on the front porch went on, you better be home. And but that was typically so that we could all eat together,
Yeah.
and we did. When my father
Nice.
would get home from work, and this was back in the day, very different kind of world. Mom was at home, she'd make dinner. Dad got home from work, light went on the porch. You better be home in the next 5, 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And we all sat down and we all ate together and we all found out what everybody was doing.
Yeah.
And that wasn't different than most people that were friends. In fact, the oddballs were the ones that didn't do that. It was just, that was the norm. So I think there's something to that. I think there's a lot to that. I'm glad you brought that up. Jerry, you want to jump to the burning question? Should we jump right to the burning questions and get at them? Because I think that we're going to pull some more gems out of Steve with this.
Yeah, I just want to again triple underscore where Steve took us there, because
Sure.
this isn't what, I think there's a tendency sometimes to take conversations like this and say, well, okay, those are soft and squishy. And I can't affect culture. Culture is a big concept and what have you. But what Steve did there, and thank you for that, is took us to personal agency. It is not being done to us. There are spheres of influence in everybody's life where we can act. That's been very thought-provoking in this conversation, because when I think about Purposefully Human, the organization, and how we want to develop the messaging and what have you, we need to be mindful of what we can advise people to do to express their agency. It's all well and good. Well, it's not good at all, but you can just stare and wring your hands, and you can go talk to your boss, or you can go talk to your CEO or an organization. And Steve, I'm sure you deal with this all the time, to be honest. Like, well, that's, I didn't hire you to fix culture. Well, no, but every single person in this organization has agency. And if we can activate that, then we can make huge differences in the world. So thank you
But
for bringing up that.
everybody in this organization is the culture. That's
Yeah.
the thing.
Yeah, well, that's, I think we have forgotten that, to be
Yeah.
honest.
But I did, Steve, and I'm glad you brought that up, Jerry, because one thing you did talk about, Steve, was a success team. That right there is a culture. When you, especially if you can, you get on a call with some people and they're all part of your success team,
Oh,
you're
yeah.
building a culture right there, And that's how we build larger cultures. It's the little cultures that then connect to other ones, and that's how we build culture. I mean, that's how an organization, this office does things a certain way, this office does things a little bit differently, but when you come together, you start to talk about that stuff. And that's how culture gets built. So every little thing that we all do contributes to that culture. So if somebody says, I can't We can't change culture. Yes, we change it every day.
Yeah, or we fail to change
Or we fail to change it. Yes.
it.
Or we
Yeah.
just accept
Or we accept,
what's there. We
right?
accept status quo, right? But I really love that concept, the idea of the success team.
Well,
I feel
one
like
thing
I'm
I've
part of your
noticed,
success team, Steve. So
Steve posted a fascinating study he did in Halifax on people showing thanks for holding doors open. Beautiful work, by the way, Steve.
thank you.
Well, one of the things I've noticed here in the Seattle area is how that's everyone does it. I mean, everyone holds the door, and everybody that the door's been held for says thank you.
Thank you.
I think we all know places in the world where that's pretty uncommon, to be honest. So again, that goes to that personal agency piece, Steve. I mean, each of those people, I had somebody hold a door for me yesterday. I was a full 3, 4 yards behind them, and they had little kids, And this woman resolutely stood there and held that door. And I was so impressed because, I know places where you can go and they'll just let it slam in your face. But she took the time and using one of Neil's ideas, inconvenienced herself to be of service to another human. And that was just, like you said, Neil, we are the culture. I love that phrase.
I get a quarter every time you say it now. See?
Yeah, you better trademark
All
it because I might steal it. Yeah.
right, Steve, I'm going to jump to some questions because we don't want to burn up people's time here.
Okay.
The first question, this is probably the toughest one. But what's something that you see that we might call purposefully inhuman? And it's something that maybe we all accept, or we've just come to just say, okay, it is the way it is. But it's something we could possibly change that could be better. Can you think of anything?
Well, the first thing that jumps to my mind is how we characterize generations.
Give me more. Give me more. What do you mean?
Well, this is a knee-jerk reaction,
Okay, go ahead.
but so let's see if there's some if there's anything to this idea. I'm not sure if there is a lot different between that much different between a baby boomer and a Gen Xer, or I don't even know what a Gen Xer is, but
Right.
and
Okay.
they say, well, the current generation, with the young generation, well, we believe in things beyond ourselves. Well, I remember growing up in the 70s seeing people in on university and college campuses standing against and weapons and people died standing for things, protesting. And like, and 100 years ago, there was women who put themselves at personal risk so that others could vote, and they never voted. And
And then some of them died.
yeah, a lot of them. And so I'm not sure if by making there's differences in how we grow up and what we're accustomed to, but I'm not sure if being so special and elevating or de-elevating generations for characteristics, I don't know if that's really helpful or not. And I know there's consultancies rooted and based on that, and I applaud you in the work that you do, but I'm not sure if it serves us in being more human, in more purposely human. So
Wow, this is
I
a big
don't know if I,
subject. This
huh?
is a biggie. This is a big subject right here. We could kind of dive into this because what I'm seeing is kind of there's two. In a way, this involves empathy. And what I mean is, I think there needs to be more empathy in different generations for the others in multiple ways. And what I mean is seeing the differences, seeing that, yes, there are some things that are harder for you or were harder for you when you were young or whatever, but also seeing the similarities and being able to say, for example, if my son came to me and he said, "Your generation won't stand up for anything," it's like, really? Vietnam War, it's empathy for those things to look back and say, "Well, wait a minute, that generalization doesn't hold, right? We need to be more mindful of our similarities and our differences." But again, it comes down to empathy, I think, maybe.
Because I don't think I fully proved my treatise, and but you're because it's not a well thought out one, other than it's something that within me I've never really resonated strongly
Oh, I
with differences
understand.
in generations, and I think your empathy, yeah, that is certainly a key thing in being, it helps us be other focused and not self focused. Gratitude does the same thing. It gets us being other focused versus being self focused.
All right, burning question number two.
Okay.
want you to think back for a moment to a kind of a bad time, but think back to COVID when we were all stuck in our homes and doing all that stuff. COVID changed a lot of things for a lot of people. And for some people, it disconnected them or they felt disconnected. But for some, it actually got them more connected in ways, even though sometimes it may have been doing this, but they actually began to get more connected. And I wondered from you, where were you in that? How did that impact you? And has it had any impact on how you are now? Did it change anything one way or the other? Just curious.
When COVID happened, we were living with our daughter and grandson were living with us, and we were living together. So it in some ways there is this joy because we were a bit of a bubble together, the four of us, and having a small child, a 4-year-old, 5-year-old, was really heartwarming. I also remember
That's a generous statement.
it really was. Well, especially when mom was there to take care of him. At the end of my work days, I was physically exhausted through COVID, like especially the first 6, 7, 8 months. Maybe it was a year. I don't know. I was physically exhausted, and I had never felt in my entire life being physically exhausted from work at in an office. And I think my strongest memory from COVID is Max and I were outside playing, and there were restrictions in place, and we had bubbles in our area, and maybe there was 6 or 10 people you could have in your bubble, and there were kids next door, and Max was not in the bubble. And he's like 5 years old. And we went outside and he was like, "Can I go play with Audrey and Matthew?" I said, "Buddy, you can't. They're not in our bubble." I said, "But you know what? Someday you will. You're going to be able to do it again. Play with your friends." And he looks at me and he says, "And touch them?" And I had no idea how long it was going to last, right? And I just knew at some point it'd be, at least I peddle hope for a living. So that's part of my problem. I just know it's going to be okay. But it was just like, yes, and you're going to be able to touch them. And that experience, that was probably about 5 years ago. It's like a distant memory now.
Did it
So,
impact your did that experience impact anything for you, like in the ways you do things now at
well,
all?
it just thinking of like that incident with Max just really reinforced to me the importance of connecting with other human beings, and especially for kids, like kids, youth, but it's not just kids and youth. You and I. The three of us and you, do you know what we are? Grown up kids. We're
Oh,
kids
yeah.
in big bodies. That's all we are. So I think it's really important for us to connect.
Sure.
And I'm an introvert. I go to the Chamber of Commerce dinners, and as I'm walking in, I'm going, "Oh my goodness. Oh, I hope I see someone I know very fast, because it's just re I'm putting myself out there to do that." But even the science around this, even when introverts are forced to go out and connect with other humans, they feel better.
Wow. I'm still reeling about your, what's his name, Max?
Max, yeah, Max, like
The idea
so
of
much wisdom.
when he says, and touch them, I'm like, oh,
Yeah.
okay. Wow. All right.
You know what I heard in there, real quick, is maybe a lot of us had lost an appreciation for how cool that old normal was. Because it just was part of the wallpaper, right? And when you couldn't do it. For an extended period of time, it was like, everyone looked forward to, well, now, when can I touch them again? When can I hug them again? When can I be in the same room with them again? Because, anytime you lose contact with an appreciation of something good, it's easy for it to leave your mind, right? So, you get reminded because of isolation, what have you. It's like, oh yeah, we had it pretty darn good, and we need to re recover that. Still
Yeah,
challenged, but.
I went through touch with withdrawal. I grew up from a long line of touchers, people.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't mean that weird, but talking to somebody and put your hand on their shoulder, things, just things like that. I mean, I'm that kind of person, Somebody's going through something tough, I'm big on, you touch their shoulder, you touch their arm and say, "Hey, I got your back," whatever. Or I'm a big hugger too. I went through hug withdrawal. It was like I gotta hug somebody. You just It's a thing. All right, last question. And this is I have a feeling this might be just easy for you. Maybe too easy for you, Steve. Last question. If you could give advice on what anybody could do to be more purposefully human, what would that be?
Oh, gee, this is a long ball, isn't it?
It's
I
an
mean,
80 mile, it's a 60 mile an hour fastball.
yeah, first I'm thinking a change up is coming. I know it. And I'm going to be out way in front of it. For me, when I discovered the practice of gratitude about 20 years ago, like it really was a game changer for me in my life, in my understanding of who I am as a human, as a father, as a community member, as a son, brother, uncle, whatever, right? And seeing kind of, I would describe myself as going from thinking I'm this self-made man, this self-made person,
Right.
to someone who not. Like I describe it as I saw my life handed to me on a silver platter, but it doesn't mean like you're sitting back drinking martinis and ordering Mai Tais and everyone do. No, it's like this sense of my life is a gift that comes with immense, I don't want to say response, but just when I receive my life as a gift, it brings such a sense of gratitude into my head and my heart that my success to think, why do I see it as a gift? Because of my success team. I recognize my contributions, the contributions of others, go right back to the beginning, knowing your gifts, standing in your greatness, like not shying away from things that you do, because we still have to show up. So that's discovering gratitude. So, what can you do on a daily basis? Start by just making a list of three things you're grateful for. And if you're already doing that, then I'm going to say up your game. Continue on the journey of mastery and connect with another human or humans and listen or read to what they're grateful for. Okay, because then you're not, because that gratitude practice all by yourself is one thing. Engage with another human, you're doing one connecting, but you're also going to get some inspiration and perspective that you probably, I guarantee you, every day you're not going to be expecting it.
Well, I have to say, I'm in the middle of reading your book. Steve's written a great book called Surviving to Thriving, and I'm in the middle of it. It's excellent, and it really gives the reasoning. It's kind of you tell the story. You tell your story of gratitude and how that impacted your life and how you use it and how others can use it. And it's just a really good story and a good there's a lot of insight in there about how that can impact your life. And it's interesting because it sounds like it's something almost silly. Some might say, really? Just being grateful for the birds outside, that's going to help my life. And you go, yeah, actually, it will. It does impact you. It does change. It changes a lot. It really
Yeah.
does. But th there's some gems in there about that. And so if you're out there and you're interested and you want to learn more about this, that'd be a great place to start. Just dial up Steve and read his book. So, Jerry, before we let Steve go his merry way, I'm first of all going to say, Steve, thank you so much. I appreciate your friendship and I appreciate the meaningful history you and I have had over the last 2 or 3 years, and I want that to keep going. But I really appreciate you coming on board here and helping us out and giving us your insights. Jerry, you got what do you have for Steve before he
Oh
takes off?
yeah, a ditto. What a delightful conversation, Steve. I really enjoyed it. I just really admire the way you took what I think some people might think is kind of like a loose new age idea, like gratitude and culture, but you took it right to ground, and you said, no, it's really core to our humanity, and then you went further and you said, here are things each of you can do that's backed up by science and experience. So in the course of not even an hour, you gave practical nuts and bolts things that people can take away and go do, which is fantastic. Thank you for doing that. Really appreciate it.
Well,
So
you're welcome. You're
with
welcome,
that,
and
Steve,
thank
we're
you.
gonna say see you later and thank you again. Appreciate
My
it.
pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thanks again.
So Jerry, Steve was he's a fantastic guest.
Oh man, what a great conversation. Thanks for
And
recommending him.
we've got a few more minutes, and can you share with us, what are your takeaways? What were some big points for you in that?
Well, I'm going to just repeat what I said in closing with Steve. I mean, taking this idea of connection, these ideas of connection and gratitude right to ground for people, because they're not just things that people ponder about and write books about and what. This is actually real. And I'm familiar with some of the sciences they're referring to. I mean, people that just pick one, pick his specialty, gratitude. People that express and share gratitude are happier, healthier, more pro-social. I mean, there's hardly a category of humanness that isn't like scaled up by practicing gratitude. So what a gift he gave us and our listeners by delving into this today. And I have a feeling, and as we program future conversations, that we'll be returning to this theme of, what is the purposeful human toolkit, on a personal basis, things like gratitude practices, things like all the way from seemingly simple everyday things like, eating together, which is a conversation you and I have had before.
Well, that's what I want to have happen, because that means that you and I can fly to London and get with David and all those guys over there, and we can all have a big dinner together.
Oh, what
And
a
so
great
that would
episode
be,
that would make.
yeah, that'd be great. That'd be fantastic. So.
I think, well, as I think about, what's happened in the years since COVID, and we haven't recovered fully yet. There's a lot of work to be done. Is I really think people forgot what being human was, and maybe they didn't really fully appreciate it before because it was just the world we lived in for a lot of people. But there's something about being put in isolation for an extended period of time that focuses the mind. So there's another theme that we can continue to develop. And I encourage people watching as I said before, to continue to watch this program as it develops, watch the episodes that we shared with the authors from last year, but also let us know. If you want us to look at topics or speakers that you, our community, find interesting and helpful, let us know. And we'll workshop that and put things together that are helpful to the community.
Well, thanks, Jerry. There's a few I guess for me, there were several things I wrote down while I was talking, there were the big three things where he said we should eat together, and I talked about that a little bit earlier and how important that is. And that's important just like I said, every culture seems to do that. It's important to almost any culture. And it usually is a bridge to any culture. If you've ever, if I
Oh,
used to
good
love to
point.
watch Anthony Bourdain's show, he had several different shows, but the ones where he traveled all over the world, but he sat with people and ate with them. And that was something that he wasn't from that culture, but he could enter into any culture and sit down and say, we're going to break bread together.
Right.
The other, Steve talked about encouraging connection, and I really think that's important, that we encourage more connection, not virtual connection, but physical connection. Go out, put your phone down, go out, just go out and have a pint with somebody, or go out and have dinner with somebody, or just go sit on the back porch and invite somebody over and sit and talk, And then finally, he said, you have to connect to your gifts. Reflect on your life, connect to your gifts, and then use them in the service of humanity. And immediately I was thinking about Tolstoy, because Tolstoy spent quite a bit of his life struggling with what is the purpose of life? Why are we here? And ultimately he came up, his answer was the purpose of life is to serve humanity. And that was the first thing I thought of when Steve said that, for hundreds of years, we've known this is the thing. This is what makes us happy. This is what makes us healthy and successful. Finally, he talked about that success team. And as he was talking, the more I started to think, who's on my success team?
I
Who are
love
people,
that.
And I thought about you and Beth, and there are a bunch of people that I threw in the bucket of my success team. And the more I thought about it, the bigger the bucket was getting, And that will really make it, I think right there, just considering that will make you more grateful because you begin to add to that bucket.
I agree because one of my life pivots was I didn't have the terminology and the clarity of the concept that Steve shared, but somehow in my soul I felt it. So one of my life pivots was I started adding to my success team the team that fixes the potholes on the roads so that they stay open so I can get
True.
where I
Yeah.
need to
Yeah.
go. The
Trash collector.
trash collect,
Yeah, exactly.
the
The
people
guy at the
that
grocery store.
Maintain, public water and sewer. When's the last time you worried about that? Well, for most people, it's been a long time, and you get these news alerts about boil water advisories, and you go, "What, really? In 2025? Well, there's been some sort of an accident and what
Or
have
there's
you."
been a water main broke and
Yeah, but the fact that there's a team there monitoring and fixing that, they're on your success team too. So when you start to I'm going to think about this a lot. I suspect we'll return to this, but when you start to expand the scope of, and I love Steve's concept of your success team, I think what you do is you naturally expand the scope of your connected universe and you care about it more.
And you are more purposefully human with those
Yeah,
people because
you
of
care
it.
about it more.
We've come for a full circle. All right, well, we're virtually at that 1 hour mark, I believe. And we're going to take off because we respect people's time. We call it the Purposefully Human Radio Hour for a reason. And Jerry, thank you so much. I really appreciate, I always appreciate you being here and joining me for
Same
this.
here.
And to Steve, I know you're out there. Thank you so much. And thanks to everybody who's listening to this, watching this, taking the time out of your day to be inconvenienced and listen to this and maybe go out and do something that make our world better. So thanks to everybody, and we'll see you on the next Purposefully Human Radio Hour.
Thanks again, folks. Take care.